This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV. Total Red Man has ever
done something like this to me. It's a killer!
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the dregs of humanity.
Previously on It Was a Thing on TV, 157 episodes, it all comes down to this.
And Greg, say what the robot looks like or who the robot looks like.
Oh, the robot looks like Awesome-O from South Park. Oh, but look who's
there's
the
robot!
There's Otto's robot! And he's looking at the soda machine.
Oh, this part's great!
Oh. He's using, like, telekinesis on the freaking...
That would be radio waves, remember?
Oh, radio waves, okay.
Because he's a robot!
He's a robot.
Yeah, he's sexing up the vending machine.
Meanwhile, the robot is getting his robot freak on with the drink dispenser.
Oh! He took Bo's pants down, and Lori Handler can now finally take the picture, and everyone's like, ha 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 ha. And that's the end of your movie.
Okay. You gotta have more.
We gotta have more.
More.
But how are you gonna have more?
To be continued, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Woo!
And now, the conclusion.
Episode 159, Submission 1734, High School USA, the 1984 spin-off Unsold Pilot. High School USA, the 1984 spin-off Unsold Pilot, aired on NBC on Saturday night, May 26th, 1984. Hey, this aired when I was literally one day old.
A one, a two. A one, two, three, four!
I'm so glad that school is in. Now I can see my old classmates again. Won't you say the summer's through? Doing things mother told me to do. Wash the dishes, scrub the floor. I taught a little baby how to count the four. Made a man to cut the grass. And that school is in last.
School is in. Oh yeah.
For that. I'm sorry. We had to play it again.
Yes, we did. You know what? If Excelsior High School had a school song, that would be it.
That would be it.
Because all sorts of WTF-ery goes on at Excelsior High School. Apparently, so much so that NBC said, hey, we want more of this.
We want more of this. People love this TV movie. We need more of it.
But did they love the TV movie, or did they love Michael J. Fox and Nancy McKeon and Todd Bridges and a robot?
And Tom Ballard.
They liked everybody who did not make an appearance in this pilot. Well, and there's a lot of people who didn't appear in this pilot. But also, there's a lot of people who did appear in the pilot that appeared in the movie.
Yeah, there was a bunch of people who went on to reprise their roles. And then there was a bunch of people who didn't.
Yeah, but you know what? We like last week how we had three sort of reunions of old TV shows. Well, we've got three reunions this week too, albeit one of them is the same as last week. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah. Right now, let's just go over because there's a lot to like the movie. There's a lot to take in. So we're just going to start with the cast roll call. Returning from the movie is Crystal Bernard.
I'm so happy she's back.
And her Texas drawl.
Yeah. But Mike, you were commenting about her hair. You liked her hair much better in this one.
Her hair, but also the one thing that really caught my eye was when she was wearing like a wedding dress or a fancy gown. We'll get into why she was wearing it later, but there was just something about her that caught my eye more than the movie itself.
If you know what you mean.
Nah. Move on.
Also returning is Crispin Glover as the slow-witted overalls guy.
Archie.
John Grease returns as Dirty Kurt. Ken Osman returns as Baxter Franklin. And that's pretty much it for a return cast. I mean...
No, wait. You forgot about Chucky.
Oh, yeah. Chucky, the sort of jolly rotund fellow.
Yes.
Gosh, I just like the name of his. It's like the name of the actor escapes me.
Michael Zorick.
Thank you, Michael Zorick. But they are joined by some new characters and some new faces playing some old characters. We have Melody Anderson as a teacher,
who JJ has the hots for.
JJ isn't the only one who has the hots for her. We will get to that.
Hey guys, wasn't Melody Anderson in a previous installment?
Rawr!
Minimal.
Did you both roar?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
We roared in stereo, buddy.
No.
And then we have Beth Franklin, who is played not by Nancy McKeon, but by perennial that lady from That Thing, Anne Marie Johnson.
Oh, don't say that lovely woman from Anne Marie Johnson. She is hardly that woman from That Thing. She was on Card Sharks. She was on the Body Language pilot.
Did we mention that she was also in What's Happening Now?
Oh, absolutely.
And the final, the final season of In Living Color?
Yeah, she is not person from that show.
She was all... No, I mean, I'm just saying she was all over the place. She is what we call a known commodity. And
right,
quite a darling one, if I may say so myself. Although, Anne Marie Johnson, Nancy McKeon... Yeah. And speaking of... J.J. Manners is played this time by Ben Marley, who basically looks like dollar store Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, he is basically Dollar Tree Michael J. Fox.
Although he did have a really big role in the late 90s as Roger Chappie from the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, that's right. The Tom Hanks miniseries. I have that on Blu-ray. It's very good. There's many people who appear, will mention frequently on this podcast who have been in From the Earth to the Moon. Even Bryan Cranston shows up in From the Earth to the Moon.
Walter White was in From the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, no. No. Hal from Malcolm in the Middle was in From the Earth to the Moon.
No. Zordon from the 2017 Power Rangers movie.
Oh, that's right. If only Elizabeth Banks was in it, but that's another story.
That's for the Patreon podcast. It was a thing at the movies. And now we have Mr. Sirota, who is played by and Jerry Mathers as the Beaver.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Beaver. I haven't seen Larry Mondello lately. You two have a fight?
Gee, Dad, I keep telling you. Larry died 7 years ago. He gagged on an apple, remember?
Oh, I thought that was Lumpy Rutherford.
Oh, no, Lumpy died when he jumped in front of that train.
Ah, I get confused. For a while there, I even thought you were killed in Vietnam, Beaver.
Not me, Dad.
Yeah, because he's working in the auto shop.
Yep, and he hates it.
He hates it.
He's absolutely miserable. He does not like his job.
No, he does not. Playing Principal Pete Kinney, Rick Nelson. You know.
In his last role.
Yeah, because he passed away a year later.
Yeah,
he passed away about a year and a half later, yep.
And playing Crazy Leo Bandini was not America's ass, Tom.
Yeah,
Lord.
I know. This is Dollar Store Tom Villard here.
Yep, it was Dollar Store Tom Villard. Sam Slovic.
Who the hell is Sam Slovic?
I'll answer it. His only real major role on his IMDb was he played a character named Cassidy for 6 episodes on Fame.
That's it. That's the list.
That's the list. And playing Bo Middleton.
Not Anthony Edwards.
Not Anthony Edwards.
He was too busy with Lambda, Lambda, Lambda at this time.
Yeah, that's true. It was Tegan West. He was that guy from That Thing. Because, let's just say, he started out as Pete Pearson in the Wonder Woman TV show in 1979 and just kept popping up all over the place during the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
His last known role was as Brother Knox from, and I kid you not, Confessions of a Teenage Jesus Jerk.
What?
That, I have to look at this movie. What is the,
That cannot be a real movie.
It has absolutely an awkward 80s love story directed by Eric Stoltz. Okay.
What?
A teenage boy comes of age during the Reagan years, discovering that he really enjoys many pleasurable things his family and his religion frown upon. It's basically Rumspringa, the movie.
Hey, Sherry Belafonte was in it.
Hey.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, from Spring of the Movie, where's Most from Amish in the City when we need him?
Damn you, Greg.
But perhaps the most notable name was, well, basically everybody else, because Excelsior Union High School, big place, plenty of room for faculty and staff who look very familiar. For example, Mrs. McCarthy is played by June Cleaver herself, Barbara Billingsley.
Oh, we have yet another Leave It to Beaver reunion. We had one in the movie, now we have one in the pilot.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Vice Principal Roman Ng is played by Henry Gibson, straight out of Lapin.
And to me, he's best known for playing Martin Short's boss, Mr. Wormwood, in Innerspace.
He's known for me as the spokesperson from the National Appeal for the Dead on the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh, and also, he was in future installment, Erie, Indiana.
And next you have... well, we don't have Otto.
No. We don't have Otto or his robot in this.
So there's half the movie right there.
Yeah, the whole movie was built around Otto and his robot.
Yeah.
That quasi-love affair they had in that movie.
Yeah, that was just... Yeah.
What a heartbreaking scene when he almost kills him. But thankfully that robot lived.
He did. But, instead we have Craig. A guy named Craig, played by a guy named David Nell.
Who?
Exactly. He did mostly movies like Spring Break, Splash, Total Recall, and Turner and Hooch.
his big role, at least on TV, or maybe the show he appeared on most, was Mr. Sunshine in 1986, where he played Warren Leftwich. And I'm pretty sure Mr. Sunshine is on our list.
Yeah, the 1986 version. Not the later version with Matthew Perry.
And you want to talk about other projects that may or may not be on the list? Gidget Summer Reunion.
The heck is Gidget Summer Reunion?
I don't know, but I have to think that it sort of had to spawn the future entry.
The new Gidget?
Yeah. Oh. And I would be right. Hey, it had Vince Van Patten in it. Leave it alone. And playing Mrs. Crosley, Harriet Nelson. Now, this is weird to me, because in the movie, Principal Pete notes to Mrs. Crosley that she was his teacher.
Yes.
Harriet Nelson's Ricky Nelson's mother.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, that's his real-life mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's actually maybe my favorite part in the whole show is when the two of them are talking and Mrs. Crosley says to Principal Kinney, "Who do you think I am, your mother?" because Harriet Nelson is Ricky Nelson's mom. Oh, and by the way, there's our second reunion, sort of, Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah, what a classic that was.
And although we have one more to go, and this one I did not see coming at all.
One of the plots of the High School USA pilot was sort of a homecoming float sort of thing. And Beau Middleton, because he's a rich bastard, has gotten a French guy to design the thing. And the French guy who designs the thing is played by Burt Ward.
Oh my God. That is some great acting from Burt Ward to do that French accent like that. To be a French snob.
To be a French snob playing opposite an American jackass.
Oh, by the way, this is not going to be the last time we'll be talking about Burt Ward on this podcast, because eventually we're going to do the Batman 66 window cameos.
Well, we did talk about Burt Ward not that long ago in Legends of the Superheroes.
That's true. This is the second time we've talked about Burt Ward.
And you want to talk about reunions? Okay, going back to the storyline about the homecoming float. The other guys, led by JJ, the non-yuppie guys like us, led by JJ, make their own float. And who is on their float? A stripper.
But not just any stripper.
No. Perfect stripper. Played by Julie Newmar.
Yeah.
React.
That woman.
React.
Yeah. Hey, I got a question. Do you think she thanked Wong Fu for the float?
Oh, jeez, no.
Okay, so there's another reunion. Burt Ward, Julie Newmar.
Your Batman reunion. We still have more classic TV actors coming.
Yep, and interestingly enough, you know who wrote this? And perhaps one of the great comedic writers of the 70s and 80s, Pat Proft.
Oh, yes, because we've already talked about Proft in previous installment, the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, I think we also talked about him in another episode, too, didn't we?
When things were rotten, I believe.
The Red Fox Show.
That's right.
Needless to say, we've talked about him a few times.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know Pat Proft wrote for the Naked Gun movies.
And
we have to add Police Squad.
Oh, yeah. Police Squad. Police Academy. All the classics.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a freaking genius here. But you put it all together and, well, I went over the plots.
Wait. You forgot some people.
I forgot people?
Playing the coach in this show was Paul Peterson, who you might know best as the son on the Donna Reed Show. But he's done plenty of things besides the Donna Reed Show.
Hmm.
there's actually two more that you missed. One, and I'm surprised you totally skipped this, playing the superintendent, Superintendent McCarthy.
Yes!
Dick York!
Dick York!
Yeah!
Sarah number one!
Yeah. And then playing a character named Nadine.
Oh, Joanne Ouellette.
Yes, Joanne Ouellette, who you best know as Connie Lubbock from Just the 10 of Us.
Yep.
So yeah, you missed a few key people there, but yeah, this is, again, maybe not as star-studded as the movie, but it had its fair share of quality actors and actresses.
Or future well-known actors and actresses.
Yeah.
Now let's get into the plot of this pilot.
The many plots of the pilot, because like the movie that spawned it, we are basically dealing with a melange of plots centering around the teachers, the students, and their parents.
It's a lot clearer than the movie, though.
Yeah, there's a lot more division.
Yeah,
a lot it's more not coherence. A spider's web. What happens is we start with Vice Principal Ng, played by Henry Gibson, walking around and basically scaring the ever-loving you-know-what out of everybody.
Well, Henry Gibson has that scary look to him.
He wasn't this scary in Laughing, I tell you. He really wasn't.
Well, there's Chucky.
He said, "You're too fat. Lose 30 pounds.
Oh, and here's Archie, played by Crispin Glover.
And here is Bo, who apparently traded up for a Camaro.
A Camaro. And he's got one of those 80s cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And he double parks.
Yeah. I should probably let you guys know. The best way to enjoy this TV show is to forget the movie ever existed.
Yeah, pretty much. You basically have to treat the movie like the MASH to the TV show MASH. How the movie MASH has nothing to do with the TV show.
Yeah. This exists in a universe where everybody sort of forgives Bo for, well, losing to JJ in the big race of the movie. And Bo is dating Crystal Bernard's character.
Yeah, like I said in the movie, it makes more sense. Why isn't Bo going out with Crystal Bernard's character? And guess what? They must have listened to the people must have had the same complaints in 1983. Because look at that.
And hey, JJ got his car fixed. Sort of.
Excelsior Beavers.
Good night, everybody. But it sort of reads like, and because this is probably due to Pat Proft writing it, it sort of reads like the High School USA movie if it were written by the Naked Gun people, which it was.
Really? I agree with you on that. That's a great comparison there.
Yeah, same.
Like, there's a lot of sight gags, a lot of puns, but also it can be played straight. And speaking of playing it straight, here's Henry Gibson again, talking to Dollar General Michael J. Fox about his car. What about Bo's car? He's double parked. Probably in your spot.
Oh, look, there's a snow globe of Excelsior High School. Definitely not Tommy Westfall's snow globe, though.
No, it belongs to Ricky Nelson.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Ricky Nelson. And no surprise, he's still the cool principal. Well, maybe a little less cool. I don't know. What do you guys think? Cool principal? Less cool principal?
Oh, yeah, it's Ricky Nelson.
Yeah.
He's a more relaxed looking principal.
He wasn't as cool as Tony Dow.
Not as cool as Tony Dow. But
no, Tony Dow was just trying to make friends.
Tony Dow was just trying to be a friend. Ricky Nelson, you know you could jam on the guitar with.
Yeah. He wants to jam on the guitar with Melody Anderson. Hello.
Well, who doesn't?
And hey, I'll tell you something else. JJ also wants to jam on Melody Anderson.
Well, this is 1983. I'll just leave it at that.
She's a very lovely woman.
I'm sorry, this is 1984. I keep forgetting that this is now the pilot.
Not the movie.
Not the movie.
Not the movie.
Yeah.
Well, JJ volunteers to make a float since she's the faculty advisor, because that's what you do. And now we have Principal Pete asking his teacher, Mrs. Crosley, who's really his mother?
Yes.
He doesn't know that, though.
We know that that's his mother in real life.
But the question he wants to know is, am I a boring person? She's not having any of that.
No.
It's like.
And again, the best line in the entire in the show, who do you think I am? Your mother? Look, you are.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. Brilliant writing there. I thought that was absolutely hilarious.
Did we not say that Pat Prof was a genius?
He is a genius. Oh, but
whoa.
JJ shows Melody Anderson around. Oh, here's Bo.
Bo and his two yuppie friends here with their popped collars and their preppy sweaters. And here's JJ and his squad, and he's like, you're really going to build a float? It's not going to be anything compared to my float. Oh, yeah? Well, I beat your ass in that race. I can beat your ass at homecoming, too. Bring it on, son.
And so they do.
Yeah. Now we just need to find a float. And he's like, where are we going to find a float, huh? How about Auto Shop? Not like Mr. Sorota.
Oh, my gosh. This is where really you see a lot of the police squad mentality you talked about.
Whatnot.
A lot of sight gags.
Uh-huh. We have Dirty Kurt shaving, pool playing.
We have Dollar Store Tom Ward sleeping
on the dolly. Somebody's working on their car, and they're about to, you can't see it, but Dollar Store Tom Ward is about to go flying.
And also, this entire time, the shop teacher, Jerry Mathers' character, is not paying attention. He does not give a blank about it.
No. Although Crispin Glover does end up setting off a quite impressive Rube Goldberg sort of thing.
Why is there a pool table in an auto shop?
Because Pat freaking Prof. That's why.
Because it's a 1980s classroom.
Yeah, they did
we
not.
We don't need no auto and shop class.
And he's not talking to Otto. He's talking to, I guess we'll just call him not Otto.
And now we have Chucky and Dirty Kurt trying to start this car. And oh!
And like I said, he's going flying.
He's going frying. All right into Jerry Mathers' table.
Ow. That looks like it hurt.
It did. Oh, now JJ's given the inspirational speech.
Sort of a rallying of the troops. He's got Chucky. He's got Dirty Kurt. He's got Dollar Store Tom Millard.
He's got Crispin Glover.
We about to do this. And then he starts floating. But it's only because of Crazy Lou.
Crazy Leo or whatever.
Crazy Leo.
Whatever his
name. Switch.
Yeah, whatever his name is.
Whoops.
We'll just call him Dollar Store Tom Ballard.
Dollar Store Tom Ballard.
Oh, look at that, Jerry Mavers.
And Mr. Sorota's crying. You got the teacher crying, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, too bad they can't come up with a decent decent theme for it. Oh,
yeah. Oh, look at that.
And Mr. Ng watching his 80s style portable television when Bo shows up and says, JJ can't win homecoming, not with his float. Besides, my grandfather founded the award that for whoever wins homecoming. It's only fitting that I get it, because I'm an entitled
more or less, yes.
Now, certainly you can make that happen. Well, and we're in detention, and guess who's officiating?
Ken Hotsman's officiating.
Hi, Baxter Franklin. But is it me, or did he dye his hair since the pilot?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so. It's a little darker.
Yeah. Meanwhile...
Oh.
Here's the teacher. Oh, hot for somebody play hot for teacher, am I right?
Yeah. Where's David Lee Roth when you need him?
Got it bad, got it bad, got it bad. He's hot for teacher.
Zippity, 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 zap!
And he's not the only one, because here's Principal Pete.
Oh.
He's got it bad, he's got it bad, he's got it bad. He's hot for teacher.
And now the auto shop guys are coming together to come up with a theme for their float. They can't come up with a theme for their float, though. So they come up with three separate themes, and JJ gets the idea to bring them all together. I know one of them involves stripper, a nude beach, but that's the only one I remember. Greg, do you know the other two?
We'll just play the clip, I guess.
Well,
what happened?
Oh, we had a little disagreement. Couldn't agree on a theme.
So?
We'll do them all.
What?
Three-in-one float.
What, a Vietnam flashback with the Eiffel Tower and a nude beach?
Well, it's original, and it kind of says auto shop. You gotta admit that, huh?
Yeah, and that would be a really good idea, except JJ just ran into teacher again. And, yeah, as she's doing laundry. And this is going to take a while because laundromats, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know he clearly wants to go and separate her clothes, separating her delicates from her non-delicates, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, wink.
And he does, if you'd believe that. And while he's hot for teacher, again, JJ rallies the troops. Meanwhile, you know who we haven't seen yet?
Who?
Beth Franklin.
Oh.
Hey, look, it's Beth Franklin and Nadine. And in this universe, they're besties. Try to find the story.
Oh, there's Vice Principal Ng again.
What kind of shenanigans is you planning, Vice Principal Ng? And here's Chucky again. What's Chucky up to, I wonder? Meanwhile, Chucky shows up. They found themselves a car.
They didn't steal from Bob Denver again.
No, they're not gonna do that again. That would just be bad. Oh. Meanwhile, Bo and his prep squad roll up in their Camaro and talk all the junk. Here's Dirty Kurt with the car. Which, you know what? It runs. So, hey, good job.
Good job, Dirty Kurt.
Yeah. Next, we see the Camaro roll up to the Middleton Manor, and our Frenchman, played by Burt Ward, is talking about all of the designs. And his name is Francois, by the way.
And they're all eating ice cream!
I sense Chekhov's gun coming on, Greg. It's like, if you see somebody eating ice cream, chances are it's going to end up somewhere.
Well, now Ricky Nelson's going to go up to Melody Anderson.
He really trying.
Yeah, no luck for him, though.
Yeah, she doesn't strike me as the kind of person who dates coworkers or students. JJ, I'm talking to you.
I'm waiting for these two to fight. You know that would happen in the TV series. That they both fall in love with Melody Anderson's character, and they get into a fist fight or something.
Yep. And here's Mrs. Crosley again.
Mom, why do you keep bothering me at work?
Oh.
All right, now the guys are getting their float ready. While Dirty Kurt is shaving, because Dirty Kurt is always shaving for some reason.
But remember, didn't he say
he's 26?
Yeah, and he has kids.
And he has kids.
And somehow he's a sophomore. How does that happen? I don't know.
High school was the best 11 years of his life.
Mm. Yep.
Like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
All right, all right, all right.
Meanwhile, Bo and Crystal Bernard, they're watching Burt Ward build that float.
No, they're not watching Burt Ward. Yep, they are watching Burt Ward build that float. We have competing float montages.
We're going to have a montage. Montage. Even Rocky had a montage. Montage.
You know what this float needs?
What?
A robot.
Yeah.
Let's skip to lunch, shall we? So Glenn and JJ are about to have lunch together, except for one thing.
Oh, here's Melody Anderson.
Here's Melody Anderson again. And, of course, Principal Pete is having lunch with Mrs. Crosley. And the kind of relationship that a mother and son have, am I right?
I've never seen a mother and her son sitting in a school cafeteria eating together. Sorry.
No. Wait, they're not mother and son, though.
I didn't mean to say that.
Oh God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break kayfabe. Sorry. Meanwhile, the rest of the auto shop guys show up.
Yeah.
They're a little grungy.
Even though grunge wasn't a thing yet in 1984.
Nope. But hey, the trophy's in the bag, am I right?
Yeah, but look at the classy preppy kids. They're eating lobster.
Lobster Thermidor for lunch? Who does that?
They've got bibs on.
Oh, that's just tacky.
Man, they're so bougie.
Right?
But man, Crystal Bernard's hair in this movie.
Oh, gosh.
Fire. Hey, did I mention that I love wings yet?
No, but I think you should, because that's a point of reference.
Oh, but here's
Greg, our listeners love it. Continue saying it.
But here's this title card right here at the 2634 mark.
Yeah, and it has Crystal Bernard taking a big old lick of her ice cream, and all I can think is, that looks really good.
She's really loving that ice cream.
She looks good, man. She looks good.
Wait. Yeah, she looks good.
She looks good.
Looks good.
Looks good.
Are we talking about the ice cream looks good or Crystal Burn? Never mind.
Yes. The correct answer is yes. So here we are, 5 hours to the parade, and the float is nowhere near done yet.
But JJ's like, oh yeah, I'm going to get Melody Anderson. And look at that, Mike! He has a pinball machine!
Time Zone, I love that table.
Yeah, Time Zone, that's a classic.
From Bally in 1973. Yes, folks, I actually did research of that on IPDB.
Yes, it's a pinball database.
Yeah. Oh my god, JJ has a couch that folds into a bed.
Yep. You know what he also has? A big problem, because somebody looks like they're about to steal their float.
Oh no. Oh no, here's the douche.
It's the douche squad, run!
Douche squad!
Somebody do something!
Look at that.
Oh look, it's Crazy Leo. He's gonna do something. Oh my god, Crazy Leo's gonna do something.
Oh no, what's Dollar Store Tom Villard gonna do?
I don't know, but everybody's running after him now.
Oh, there's the float. He's like,
oh my god, they're reenacting the What's Happening opening credits, people. Crazy Leo is enjoying it.
And then JJ and Nanato are like,
what is that?
There's Crispin
Glover. What's going on?
And everyone else is chasing after it.
And because we know that JJ's an excellent driver, instead of doing a three-point turn or a nice U-turn, he's driving the car backwards.
Oh, so that's how Corey Haim learned it in License to Drive.
Yeah, you didn't know that. And float is still going. Did we mention that the float has no brakes? Because that's important. Also important, the town that these people live in, it has a park, and the park has a lake.
Oh, good. It has a lake.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? Crazy Leo's going flying again.
Oh,
no. Are you saying they're going to go in the lake?
They're going to go in the lake.
Oh, he's in the lake.
Oh, that's a one-stroke penalty. He's in the water. He's in the drink.
Oh, with the float.
Okay, so it's a nude beach, a war memorial, and the third one.
We played it earlier. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Well, put it all together, and now it's a pile of junk. So what are they going to do?
Hmm.
No, it's perfect. That's the way we built it. It's not a pile of junk. We built it like this. But it turns out JJ let his friends down because he spent all this time chasing Melody Anderson, where he could have just been building a float. Now, there is a skeleton of an idea of this float. Now it's up to JJ to, I don't know, try and build a body around it or something.
Yeah, something like that. So now Archie and Chucky, they're at Bo's house.
Climbing up and over the fence, and oh my god, that is a Mardi Gras float right there.
I don't think that's necessarily a house. I would say it's more like a compound with that type of wall.
No, it's a manor. Compounds have dogs.
Oh no! They crashed into the greenhouse.
That has to hurt. Uh-oh. And they just got busted.
And, are they
dropped off in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, they dropped them off in the middle of nowhere. Oh, and they took Archie and Chucky's clothes.
Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. Y'all are some terrible people.
Oh, but now, Mike, we're at the scene you were loving.
Oh, look how adorable Crystal Bernard is in her gown.
Yeah. Again, you have to pretend that Bo and Crystal Bernard are a couple, and that Beth and Nadine are besties. Look, it's right a story.
And also, remember, they're trying to win the best float.
Oh, here's Dick York and Barbara Billingsley.
First time I think we've seen Dick York in this.
Yeah, and Barbara Billingsley.
Yep.
Oh,
no,
look
we
at
saw
that.
Barbara Billingsley earlier.
Okay. Oh, there's the balloon. Oh.
Uh-huh. Well, there was the balloon.
Yeah. There's Melody Anderson.
And there's Melody Anderson. And Dick York trying to get up in that action now. Everybody trying to get up in that action, man.
Oh, a salute to the American Grease Monkey.
That is awesome.
Oh.
That is incredibly awesome. Even the red, white, and blue guys are awesome.
Oh, here's Julie Newmore.
The stripper / hooker.
Yeah.
Oh, she just accepted the money. Yeah, she's a hooker.
So we're in the parade now, and, well, everybody's presenting their themed floats. We have the Shakespearean Drama Club. We have the Good Life Club, a.k.a. Bo and his cronies.
And there's Crystal Bernard on the float.
Yeah, the preppy float.
Trying to stay on said preppy float. Celebrating our heritage, the American Grease Monkey. Meanwhile, JJ is trying to hit on Melody Anderson again. You know what? Everything's just going according to plan, isn't it? JJ's getting up with the teacher. The float is coming along nicely. Something's going to come and screw this up. What could possibly come along and screw this up, I wonder? How about a stripper on the car of the Grease Monkey float? And stop me if you've heard this one. Bo's going to Vice Principal Ng to basically be a rat. Aang goes to the superintendent to rat about the stripper on the float, calling her, quote, a degenerate woman. Bo's lapping this up. Guess who's on the float right now?
Barbara Billingsley.
His wife, the superintendent's wife.
And Dick York's like, what?
That's my wife!
That's my wife! You son of a...
Oh, boy.
And now he's... Dr. Ing is pissed at Bo.
Oh.
Oh.
Chris, Ms. Crosley's like, yeah, no.
Oh, look at that. Ricky Nelson, he bumps into Melody Anderson.
Well, that's his mother's doing. I mean, sorry, that's just Mrs. Crosley's doing.
Thanks, Mom.
Come on. Can't you see your mom's trying to help her son out?
Yeah.
And she's like, come on. What are you waiting for? An invitation? Kiss her.
Yeah. Oh, meanwhile.
Meanwhile, Chucky and Crispin Glover are back in school wearing something.
Yeah, they're choking each other out. They're running all over the place.
And Vice Principal Aang is trying to explain to the superintendent that his wife is not, in fact, a degenerate.
And then, oh, wait, what is this?
It's the stripper! In Mr. Aang's office! And Nadine just took a picture of everything! Y'all got your story, son! You see, you have a nice little cohesion of plots now. Oh, and by the way, Julie Newmar wants her 200.
Yeah.
Cash. American.
And oh no, look who's in his car!
Oh.
He's got a camera!
This just gets better and better. Hey,
this is getting worse and worse. Oh, here comes the marching band.
And here's to present the trophy, June Cleaver.
June Cleaver's here to present the trophy.
And the trophy goes to...
Bowen and Marie.
Oh, great.
But, oh...
Nope. What's going on here? He just grabbed the trophy like, this bloat has been disqualified.
Yeah, Bo. That's what happens when you call the superintendent's wife a degenerate.
Yep.
So JJ comes to the microphone and says, well, these folks are disqualified for this, so shouldn't the first place prize go to the second place float? Yeah, that's what should happen. And guess who is the second place float?
Yay. Auto shop. Auto shop. Auto shop.
And the crowd goes wild.
Because of course it does. Everybody loves an underdog. Little guy hits the big guy, it's audacity. Big guy hits the little guy, it's cruelty. And Bo, stop me from hurt this one. Bo's got a sad face, and he's putting Ray-Bans on said sad face. And that was High School USA. And you can see where there was sort of the nucleus of a good idea here. Especially building on the movie, or the universe set in the movie. There was a nucleus of an idea.
I sort of got, like, Revenge of the Nerds vibes from it.
Yeah. But this was, like, way before Revenge of the... This was, like...
Well, same year.
Wasn't that
year.
Far.
Oh, like 6 months?
Yeah. Well, yeah. As I said, Anthony Edwards was in the Revenge of the Nerds movie at this time.
Yeah. And do you see where this failed? Because I saw where it could have succeeded.
Yeah, I kind of do. But I actually have in my research... A article from the Spokane Chronicle the night this aired, thanks to Truth by Consensus Wikipedia. And there's sort of like a mini review of it, which I'll share.
High School USA was basically the prototype of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, as we mentioned in the previous episode. But here it is. From the Spokane Chronicle. High School USA, Saturday, NBC at 9 p.m. This one-hour special is made as a pilot for a series based on last year's nostalgic presentation of the same name. And I think the network missed the boat by not picking it up. It's not great, but it does have a lot of special guest possibilities. It stars Rick Nelson as the school principal, Henry Gibson, Ben Morley, and Melody Anderson, and features appearances by Jerry Mathers, Barbara Billingsley, Paul Peterson, Burt Ward, Ken Osmond, and Harriet Nelson in a story that pits the auto shop losers against the preppies in a fort building contest. Oh, and by the way, Mike, in the voiceover at the end of the pilot, what was on right after this?
A special called Those Wonderful TV Game Shows, hosted by Carl Reiner.
Get set for a laugh-filled hour as Steve Martin, Johnny Carson, and many more show you TV's funniest moments of the last 30 years on Those Wonderful TV Game Shows. Next, later, you'll flip out for Saturday Night Live with host Flip Wilson and musical guest Stevie Nicks. Be there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Carl Reiner.
Oh, we miss you, Carl. But to think, as I mentioned, this was one... I was literally one day old when this aired. Who knows? Maybe my mom was watching this in the hospital. Who knows?
I know you were probably were.
Now, one notable thing about the High School USA pilot I want to mention is there was one person that was considered for the pilot but didn't accept the role. And it's somebody that we've mentioned previously on this podcast. A young comic from Minnesota who was making appearances on Saturday Night Live at this time by the name of Joel Hodgson.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. A very good writer and actor himself.
Yes, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Now, at this time, he was a hot commodity in Hollywood, but he was fearing that he was turning into a showbiz person, and he contemplated quitting. And it was an incident with NBC and the head of the network, Brandon Tartikoff, in 1984 that finally led him to give up comedy for a time. Tartikoff's office contacted Joel and offered him the starring role in the High School USA pilot. They sent him the script for the pilot after reading it, and Hodgson turned the part down, telling Tartikoff's people that it wasn't funny. And the executives mistook Hodgson's complaints and thought it was a bargaining ploy. And their response was to offer the role to Joel again at triple the amount of money. And Hodgson was appalled that the executives could not understand that he would just turn a project down purely because he thought it was terrible, and that no amount of money was going to get him to change his stance. So he refused the offer and went back to Minneapolis and declared that he was quitting comedy.
Yeah, I remember this story.
So incidentally, a couple years later, as we know, Joel Hodgson came back to comedy thanks to a Minneapolis TV executive by the name of Jim Mallon to create a show for the UHF station KTMA, and that became Mystery Science Theater
3000.
So yeah, if you really think about it, it's thanks to this pilot that we have Mystery Science Theater 3000.
It's pretty cool if you think about it.
Yeah, but in all honesty, I know Joel Hodgson, I'm guessing he was offered the role of JJ, but I can see why he turned it down, but in a sense, I don't think he would have been right for the role.
No, I mean, Michael J. Fox pretty much wrote the archetype, and we wouldn't get somebody who would, you know, be able to roll with a role like that, of course, until, some of you have heard this one, 1988 and the Good Morning Miss Bliss pilot.
Yeah.
But that's another story for another episode.
One other thing I want to point out is, if this pilot had gotten picked up in 1984 for the 84-85 fall season, there's probably a good chance also that Crispin Glover would not have been considered for the role of George McFly in Back to the Future. since that would have been shooting in the middle of the 84-85 TV season. And as I mentioned in the previous episode, Michael J. Fox was not the original choice for Marty McFly because primarily Michael J. Fox would be busy at the time doing Family Ties, and he only got the role after Eric Stoltz was fired for being, well, so lousy in the role as Marty that they had to get Michael J. Fox in the movie. Well, what do we have to say about the High School USA 1984 pilot?
Well, the pilot and the movie from whence it came were both things on TV.
Yeah, that's right.
And I actually thought that the show was better than the movie.
I thought so, too. I mean,
less plots, a nice convergence at the end.
And it's more of an ensemble piece, whereas you definitely knew who the stars were in the movie, and they were basically trying to write to them rather than write to everybody.
Yeah, but I honestly thought, I'm kind of going to be the one guy that thought the movie was better. And you know what? I'm going to explain why in another edition of It Was a Thing on TV Haiku Corner.
Oh, no.
Play the music. Oh, listen to that music. It's very sweet, isn't it?
We didn't soothing.
We didn't have it last week, so figured it's time we make it up in this week.
Awesome.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready, man.
Mike, are you ready?
Lay it on us.
Because I know you pay copious amounts of attention to what I say, Mike.
I got you, man. Hey, Greg, I got you, man.
Okay, here we go. High School USA pilot. What was Brandon missing here? Todd's magic robot.
Snaps all around, my friend. Snaps all around.
Snaps and claps. Nicely done.
Two snaps and a kiss.
It's two snaps, a twist, and a kiss.
Oh, that's right. Wow!
Hi, Whitey.
Oh, hi, Beaver.
Boy, that Eddie Haskell, he really makes me mad.
Well, why don't you kill him?
Nah, I could go to jail. Besides, it's against the law.
But, Beaver, no one would have to know that you did it.
I don't know, Whitey. I don't even have a gun.
Come on, Beaver. What are you, chicken?
So that's the story, Wally. I can't hide it anymore. I'm gay and I'm proud of it.
Gee, Eddie, you better stop coming around here anymore.
I'm just worried about the boys, Ward. How do I tell the Beaver that I'm ready to wait at Tijuana with Fred Rutherford?
Just be honest with him, dear. That's all. When I was a young man, my mother was always straight with me. She used to say, Ward, you're boring. You're a very dull kid.
Mom? Dad?
Come on, Ward. Ward, come on.
Boy, Beaver, you're gonna get it.
Beaver, I'm afraid you're going to have to explain yourself.
Gee, Dad, I hated him. Besides, he was always calling me a bum.
Beaver, after all I told you about taking the law into your own hands, June, call the police.
Boy, Dad!
Wally, he's just going to have to learn his lesson. Maybe 35 years in the slammer will teach the Beaver something.
Boy, Wally, life stinks.
Yeah, but so do you, Beaver.
Yeah. Thanks, Wally.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Wednesday, Balky sets a burglar trap.
All right, Buster, reach for the friendly skies.
Balky, you got the gun. That's great.
You can put your hands down now.
Even better.
Not you.
Oh.
Down yours, up yours.
Perfect strangers. Then, Charlie meets the machines.
Good morning, Fred. Good morning, Wilma.
No, that's Fred. This is Wilma.
How do you tell them apart?
You have to lift them up.
Head of the class, right after Perfect Strangers.
Wednesday.
This is a recipe for love. New Cheese Lovers Plus. Blend an abundance of three alluring cheeses and two irresistible toppings, your choice. And what you get is one provocative pizza. Get all this love for only $8.99. Or get twice the affection for just $4 more. New Cheese Lovers Plus from Pizza Hut. The name says it all.
Monday, Alf starts a night of premieres with an adventure in babysitting.
He disappeared! Gotta get that kid a beeper!
Then the Hogan family's in Paris, and David's in love with a princess. And what's more challenging than being the single mother of three?
I'll be the mother of six.
Barbara Eden gets a brand new life. Three all-new comedy premieres Monday.
So I saw this detergent with bleach alternative, and I wondered how it compared to my Clorox 2 on colored loads. So I pulled out the twins' dirty shirts. I washed this one in detergent with bleach alternative, and this one in Clorox 2 and my regular detergent. And look, the shirt washed in Clorox 2 is cleaner and brighter. I think I'll stay with my Clorox 2. Clorox 2 Color Safe Bleach gets clothes clean and bright.
Here are 20 nudies! This is a Disney World this year!
Call 1-407-W-DISNEY now.
Are you looking for some fun in the afternoon?
That'd be nice.
Because we've got the game that makes people stand up and cheer.
Bulldog, bulldog, bow, wow, wow.
With the questions or answers.
President the Hoover Dam is named after.
And the answers are fun.
Who is President Hoover?
Right.
So get in on the excitement of Chicago's fastest half hour of fun.
Oh, you said it.
Play Jeopardy. Weekdays at 3:30 on Channel 7.
Warrior Mountain. Death and danger are my constant companions, and I live more in one day than most men do in a lifetime. So when it comes to snack time, do I want snacks designed for weenies? No thanks, pal. Just give me the snack that's easy and quick, Mr. Larry's toast on a stick. Thanks. She gives me the steely nerves I need to laugh in the face of danger. I personally ignore all warnings from the Food and Drug Administration to ensure that every bite is an adventure. So hang tough with the snack that a man likes to lick. That's Mr. Larry's toast on a stick. Now, let's see what this baby will do.
Episode 160, submission number 1959. Coneheads, the 1983 cartoon pilot. Coneheads was an unsold pilot that aired on NBC the night of October 14th, 1983.
You know, Chico, that has a very Gremlins-ish vibe, that theme.
You were getting that too, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's absolutely nuts. Just the craziest. What do I even say to begin talking about this?
I think the obvious starting point is mentioning what Coneheads is. Or who they are.
Okay.
I know most people know that it started on SNL.
Okay. So SNL had characters created by Tom Davis, Dan Aykroyd, and Lorne Michaels, where you have a pair of aliens from the planet Remulac, and their heads were shaped like cones.
Because they're the cone heads.
They were the cone heads, yes. And they were on our planet for the sole purpose of colonizing it and turning it into a spaceport.
Yeah, well, that sure worked out well.
A little bit. Yeah, they ended up going native, as you can see by the many episodes of the Coneheads on SNL and the 1993 movie.
And the 1983 movie is an underrated classic.
Yeah, it is. I can tell you right now, I was at an age where I thought the actress who played Connie was really cute.
Oh, yeah, same. And also, she ends up with Chris Farley in the end of the movie.
Which, let's be honest, gave us Bat Guy's hope.
Yeah.
But before that, a similar story was told in the form of a 1983 adult animated cartoon. Now, you think nowadays with your Simpsons, your Family Guys, your Rick and Morty's, that an adult-themed animated cartoon sounds easy to me. Well, if it was easy to people in 1983, we would have had more of those. Well, it wasn't that easy, was it?
Yeah, because this is like a foreign concept in an adult animated cartoon in 1983.
Yeah. Because you have, okay, you have these well-known characters, Beldar and Primat of the planet Remulac, and they're being voiced by, of course, Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin.
And wouldn't Kate and Allie have just started?
Kate and Allie would have just started, yes.
Okay.
Kate and Allie premiered in fall of 84, so the following season.
Okay, so it's 1 year later. I was off. Okay.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Uh-oh.
Oh, jeez!
Any excuse to bring up Susan St. James?
I quit. I'm done.
But, you know, you could, you know, have a voice part and then do, like, a flesh and body part.
Yeah, just it's happened before.
Yeah, just ask Hank Azaria, who was doing The Simpsons, at the same time he was doing Herman's Head. Same with Yardley Smith. So we have Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd. Also, we have Lorraine Newman voicing their baby, then little kid, then teenage daughter, Connie, who is oddly, she knows that she's different. She doesn't really understand how different she is until, well, Beldar and Primat tell her that, of course, there are a pair of aliens who went native.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's trying to just live an average, normal teenage life.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to live an average, normal teenage life with your head oddly shaped? So how did this come about? Well, the folks behind SNL teamed up with noted animators Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass, who, by the way, we did discuss on a previous entry, The Mouse and the Mayflower.
Oh, yeah. Let's not remind us about that.
Yeah, and they teamed up with Pacific Animation Corporation, headed at the time by Masaki Iizuka, to produce this pilot. And the pilot itself was written by, of course, Tom Davis and Al Franken, with additional voice work by Tom Davis and Robert McFadden. Robert McFadden, of course, one of Rankin Bass's in-house voice artists. So, what happened on this? Well, actually, pretty much know what happened. This is basically, being a pilot, serves as a bit of an origin story. We have life on the planet Remulac, and Beldar and Primat are chosen to go to Earth to with the express sort of intent on colonizing it and turning it into a spaceport. Now, they kind of sort of look like they're SNL counterparts, but you can tell that their appearances are a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Exaggerated. Thank you, Brain.
They're like cartoony.
It's very cartoony.
I'd even add the phrase crudely drawn.
Yeah.
They just didn't look right.
By the way, we're watching this as we do this, and all I can say is, anybody notice that chair?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
does this yes. look like anything?
And by the way, this aired at 8:30 at night.
And it slipped past the sensors.
I'll take getting crap past the radar for $200, Alex.
Well, consider who co-wrote this special and what he later got in trouble for. That's yep. all I'm going to say.
Yep. So they're charged with learning all about Earthlings and, well, taking over.
And they're supposed to land at the UN.
Yeah, in New York City. But, of course, because Beldar is driving, they get lost.
Yeah, somebody took a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
Yeah. And, of course, Primat wants... Beldar says, can I just read this speech I'm supposed to give to the UN? Primat's like, you must commit it to memory. Suffice it to say, they're lost.
And they're on the moon.
Yeah. They're on the moon, and they eventually make it to Earth. But they don't make it to New York City. They land just a bit outside. And they make their way to what looks to be an old trailer that functions as a TV repair shop.
Yeah, because they're getting chased by a bunch of dogs.
Uh-huh. Now, this is a very important part of the story because our TV repairman, who A, has a gun, and B, owns those dogs, is named Louis, and his family actually came from France. Beldar and Primat can't tell them that they're from Remulac.
Oh no. So, because that would give it away.
Get the game away.
So yeah. Their excuse as to where they came from is, oh, we also come from France. Okay.
That totally makes sense. And they can't even check it out, so just go with it.
Yeah. And when Louis says, we're going to serve this deal under the table, guess what? They actually go under the table.
And this is after they spend all of 30 seconds repairing a TV set. A Japanese TV set. They love making that sort of distinction there.
Yeah. But, oh, Louis' all-new TV repair one-hour service.
Yeah, 1 hour. It actually takes 1 minute.
Yeah.
And to hide the fact that their heads are oddly shaped, Beldar wears
an elf hat.
And I guess you could call his collar an elf costume as well. So
I gotta say, Beldar looks adorable in that elf hat.
Yeah. So this actually ties into the SNL mythos because I believe on the show, Beldar is a TV repairman.
Yes.
Okay. One day after work, Beldar and Primat are in the throes of hot alien romance when... Oh, boy.
She's with Cone.
She is with Cone. So, of course, they spend the night paying attention to and God created woman just so they can figure out what on earth they're supposed to be doing. What on earth they're supposed to be... Yeah. I made it funny.
Oh, and they got the sensor rings. That means they're going to have sex.
Yes.
And oh, she's in labor. Primate. Okay.
And conehead females give birth out of their heads.
Yeah.
Which you can't see, but you can definitely see the blankets moving all over the place.
Yeah, use your imagination.
Yeah. And congratulations, it's a female!
Oh, hey, now Beldor owns the TV repair shop. Because, yeah, Louis, I guess, moved and sold the shop to him?
They either sold the shop, moved, retired, or died. But in any case, it's Beldar's shop now. And he's basically using the shop as cover for trying to
communicate back to Remulac.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but now we have a time jump. And yep. Now he's fixing video recorders.
And Primat is wearing her trademark apron now. Only this one says, I hate housework.
But Connie comes back from the school upset. She wants to know why she's different and wants to know where she came from. But of course, she's not ready. Yeah, the excuse is, we come from France. Just keep telling them you come from France. But nope. It's an inadequate response.
Just keep telling yourself and everybody else you come from France.
Now they're consuming mass quantities. They're eating hot dogs. And look at that Beldor.
And eats with paint.
With paint, yes. Uses it as ketchup. Okay.
Now that Connie went to bed or doing her homework or whatever, Beldar and Primat plug in their communication device to see if they can't get a signal to Remulac. Yeah, about your previous mission. Remember how I was the king of 8 solar systems? Well, it's 6 now because, Well, it's 6 because there was a bit of an insurrection. And there's also some budgetary concerns that have gone through. So you're going to be stuck on Earth for a while.
Oh, no.
And like every alien in an adult-themed cartoon, and by that I mean, of course, Solar Opposites, which we'll talk about one particular episode in a future entry, they don't really like being on Earth that much.
No.
But they make the most of it.
Oh, no. Now they're at a gas station, Beldor is drinking the gas. Ew.
And they're arguing about driving to a...
place in New Jersey.
Yep.
New Jersey, welcome safe drivers. And now they're at their new house. Oh, look at that sign. Viva La France.
And he's got a backhoe in the backyard?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because they're building an X. For when the alien spaceship lands.
Oh, okay. I missed that earlier. Uh-huh. That makes sense.
Yep. They got to talk up the neighbors. And, of course, now that they've gone native, they have to know what's going on. And Primat is doing housework now. Even though, let's be honest, she hates housework. But that's okay because she is also a vacuum.
Yeah, she didn't like the suction power from her vacuum, so she just hooked it up to her mouth and inhaled.
She did this in the movie. You want to know how long they've actually been stranded on Earth? Connie's a teenager now.
Yeah.
Where she was about 7 or 8, 10 minutes ago. Now she's a teenager.
Time jump.
Yep. She's also on the swim team at school. I bet she dives like a rocket. Only, you know, downwards. Aerodynamic. Anyway.
No splash, baby.
Nope. But the neighbors did leave a sensor ring.
That's no donut. That's a coffee cake.
Ah. Well, this explains a lot, I guess.
Well, they're being good neighbors. They brought over a coffee cake.
Yeah. Yep. And now Connie's wearing a coffee cake on her head. Oh, no, that's a headband.
Yeah, over her cone.
And she's decked her cone out with stars.
Yeah, because she's going to a rock concert.
Yep.
And now they explain the story about where she comes from.
And what on earth they're doing on Earth. And how he lost the speech to the UN. And
yeah, and now they're stuck on Earth.
Yeah. Which is bad news for Connie, because she was beginning to like life on Earth. It's the only life she knew. No, it really is the only life she knew.
She just wants to groove and hang out. Oh, and here's Ronnie.
Yep.
This is her boyfriend.
And also, it should be noted that Ronnie is the character that Chris Farley plays in the 1983 Coneheads movie.
I know where Connie gets her good looks from. We'll be back by midnight, Dad.
Oh, but meanwhile...
Here comes the bad news. Hey, remember when I was the overlord of 8 star systems? Well, thanks to a bit of an insurrection, it's now 6 star systems, and, oh yeah, our budgeting has fallen through, so...
Yeah, because as we mentioned earlier, we talked about the insurrections, so now the budget has fallen through. But, oh, meanwhile, the neighbors...
They're watching a concert or something. Basically, there will be no Star Cruiser to rescue you for some time. And again, how are they going to survive living on this miserable planet?
I know, right?
I was born here and I can't survive living on this miserable planet. But think about what Connie's going through. This is the only life she knows, and now she may have to leave it.
Oh, no!
And her date now wants one of those French kisses.
Oh?
Because she's from France!
Oh, that's right, yeah. Uh-huh. She's from France, in quotation marks.
We are from France! And, okay, Beldar and Primat break the news to Connie, and, well, Connie's a bit more enthusiastic than Beldar and Primat are. But her date returns with Connie's sensor ring.
Well, not her sensor ring, it was the parents' sensor ring.
Uh-oh.
We need Susan St. James.
Uh-oh. And that's how it ends.
So, yeah. So this pilot is basically the origin story of the SNL characters.
Yeah, I'd say that.
And basically put, it fell a little short.
It did.
I mean, it's like, I get what they were trying to do, but they were only 80% of the way there. Now, which is a surprise, because the same people who write for SNL wrote this pilot.
Yeah, you had Franken and Davis. They wrote this.
Franken and Davis were like the kings of SNL back in the 70s.
Yeah, well, the one issue I mentioned to Greg before we recorded was this was a little too late, I think. If this happened in like 80 or 81, right as that first SNL group left, I think it would have been more timely, a little bit better. But you waited till late 83, so now you're talking about over three years since Jane Curtin left. And over 4 years since Dan Aykroyd left.
And like, and don't forget, it would be another 3 years before Nick at Night picks up the SNL package and starts airing it in reruns.
Yeah, so I think you lost some timeliness by waiting three and a half years after most of your components left the show, and it hasn't been on the air since 79-80. Or actually probably even closer to 78-79, since Aykroyd left before 79-80.
Yeah, because he left with John Belushi.
So, yeah, I really think timing was not best here. But actually, it was for the best because, as we said earlier, a year later, you'd have Jane Curtin on Kate and Allie for a good five-year run. And obviously, in 84, Dan Aykroyd had a pretty decent movie, Ghost Boosters? I think I got my pronunciation wrong there. Ghostbusters?
Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
Ghostbusters.
Okay, thank you, Greg. I appreciate it, Greg.
Hey,
that's not all, because a year and a half later, Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass would team up with Pacific Animation Corporation again for another project.
Oh?
A slightly more successful one.
Oh, yeah, that show.
Yeah, that show.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that show.
No. Yeah, I wonder. Oh, by the way, one thing I need to mention. Ghostbusters. It had a pinball machine.
Nice!
Oh, yes, it did.
Yes, with Ernie Hudson doing the voiceover in that. Oh, and speaking of Ernie Hudson, we'll be talking about a show he did in 1986 later this year.
So it was like a win-win-win situation that this didn't get picked up, if you will, because, again, Jane Curtin went on to better stuff and bigger stuff. So did Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, yeah.
And so did Rankin Bass.
So did Rankin Bass.
Everybody won, it seemed.
Oh, you know what else Dan Aykroyd did after this?
What did Dan Aykroyd do after this?
In 1987, he did the movie version of Dragnet with Tom Hanks.
Classic. Nice.
I can't quite place it! It tastes like milk. Just like the sign said in the building before you obliterated it. Fresh, wholesome milk. You probably love this stuff, don't you? Vitamin D, calcium, essential for good, strong bones and healthy teeth. But that's probably all Greek to you, isn't it, Mr. Gingivitis?
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Oh, guess what, guys? Hold on a second. Let me get it off the shelf.
Oh, no. Oh, Greg is pulling out from his collection of sundries here.
The Dragnet Challenge Select Blu-ray. Look at that.
Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd.
Isn't that sweet?
Classic.
That's nice.
Oh, you know who else was in the Dragnet movie?
Who else was in the Dragnet movie?
R.I.P. Christopher Plummer. We'll be talking about him next month. What else do we have to say about the Coneheads animated pilot in 1983? But one night in between episodes of Mr. Smith and Woo! Manimal, it was a thing on TV.
Yep. And again, adult-themed cartoons, they wouldn't be big things until, let's say, 5 or 6 years later. With a family from Springfield and another bald-headed goof-up father.
And of course, later in the 90s, we'd have another dim-witted father from Rhode Island.
And a not-so-dim-witted father from Texas.
That's true.
And yeah. Then we get the somewhat dim-witted father from Virginia 5 years after that.
Yeah.
And a dim-witted father with a genius father-in-law. A mad genius father-in-law. And then we have solar opposites from that guy, so maybe this was a bit ahead of its time? Maybe?
Possibly?
Yeah.
I don't know how well this would have done as a regular series, but...
I still say it was about 3 years after its ripeness.
Yeah. But hey, you know what is always ripe?
Don't say it. Do not say it.
Our website, itwasathingontv.com.
Oh, good. You didn't say it. Good. No. Thank you.
Come on, Mike.
My defenses were built up there. I thought you were going to talk about eBay Prices Right, but I'm
well, since you mentioned it.
Oh, no.
Oh,
Okay, now you could watch the pilot for free online on YouTube.
Oh, don't tell me this is going to be a tag team situation where we're bidding on a recorded copy of the pilot.
This is a Warner Home Video release.
This is that commercially released.
Yeah, this was commercially released. Somebody bought it off a Hollywood Video, and they're selling it on eBay.
Does it have the Hollywood Video sticker on it?
It has the Hollywood Video
okay,
sticker.
Okay, how much
on
did
it.
This go for at Hollywood Video?
Let me take a look for you. Hollywood Video. It didn't give me a price, though. It has a Hollywood Video sticker on it.
Okay, so let's just assume it was
but
like
it
$3.99.
Does not give me a.
It, we'll just assume.
And the interesting thing is. They built it as a kids movie.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Let me just say.
No.
Oh, no, no. But let's just say this was $3.99, $4.99.
Yes.
Just assuming that Hollywood Video was clearing out their VHS inventory when everything went to DVD. Because I know when I worked for Blockbuster in the mid-2000s, when we were switching to all DVD, we just had all the VHSs on clearance for like $3.99, $4.99. And I actually snagged the VHS of MST3K, the movie, by the way.
This Island Earth?
Oh, yeah, This Island Earth with the professor from Gilligan's Island.
Nice.
R.I.P. Russell Johnson.
Okay, Mike, what do you think? VHS copy of the Coneheads.
Buy it now.
Buy it now, price.
Oh my gosh. This could, wow. I'm going to go, I just talked to myself, I'm sorry. This could be anything, seriously. I'm going to go $29.90.
Greg?
I'm going to go $2.99.
I thought you were going to go $1 there. Okay.
I'm going to be generous. I was not going to do $1. I think it's way too much.
All right. The actual buy it now price for this copy of The Coneheads from Hollywood Video. Oh, boy. $14.99.
Yeah.
Okay. I doubled it up. All right.
Yeah. And
I really thought it was that rare.
Yeah, they said it was super rare, but here's the thing. It was actually released in 1993 to coincide with the movie.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
And it's from Telepictures, which means it would have been
Warner Home Video, yes.
So I'm guessing Warner Brothers still owns the rights to this pilot.
Well, that's actually...
It's weird because Rankin-Bass's rights are kind of like split between Universal, which owns SNL, because if you remember, DreamWorks Animation bought certain properties from Rankin-Bass a couple years back. And NBC Universal now owns DreamWorks Animation.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers still owns most of the catalog, like Thundercats and Silverhawks, so...
Maybe one day this will be like commercially available or streaming on Peacock one day. Who knows?
Either Peacock or HBO Max, one of the two. But in any event, you can find out more about all the shows we talk about on our website, itwasathingontv.com. And while there, you can follow us on all social media at itwasathingontv. And don't forget to stream our podcasts wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. Remember, 5 stars only. I do not go on eBay looking for VHS tapes.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, nobody's leaving us 5-star reviews, unfortunately. We haven't done that request in a while, but you know what? As we said, subscribe to us on YouTube, because if we get 1,000 subscribers, we can actually make some money on this podcast. That's where the real money is.
YouTube, baby.
The real money. And also follow us on Twitter at It Was A Thing On TV. Hey, Mike, you know who followed us today?
No, I don't.
Frank Sandripadre from Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast followed us on Twitter.
Special shout out.
That's amazing.
Yes, shout out to you, Frank. And I think it also helps that I retweeted from the show Twitter the GIF of the gorilla from the Filmation Ghostbusters.
Tracy?
Tracy the gorilla, yes.
Tracy the gorilla,
yeah. Speaking of Ghostbusters. The other Ghostbusters from Filmation, which we'll be talking about sometime in mid-November.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All the COVID stuff, now that we're getting back to normal, hopefully it's safe to say we're going to finally have Ghostbusters Afterlife in November, and I can't wait for it.
Yep.
Paul Rudd, baby.
Woo, boy.
Who can't get enough of Paul Rudd?
Get out of here!
Give me some of that, kid. Okay, so next week.
Well, hold on, Chico. I think we got to close the vault for the year. Let's put the pilots away until next April.
Well, I kind of have one more.
Oh, well, one more. All
one
right.
More, but not technically it was because it's pilot month. It's because an anniversary is falling for this.
25th anniversary.
Ah.
Yes, a TV movie based off of a British science fiction show.
Oh.
Aired on Fox on this week and 25 years ago.
This particular week in 1996. And not only that, but we're going to have a British theme for this week. So we're going to be covering a show from Britain. And would you believe that this show has two future members of Monty Python.
Wow.
Oh, we're going back.
This is a deep cut.
This is an extremely deep cut. But not only that, but would you believe that there's a year in the title and this show has nothing to do with the year in the title?
So what would that have to do with the actual show? We'll try and figure this out before the next installment of It Was a Thing on TV. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Wow!
All right, Primat. What else do you think our survey showed people like to bite?
Organically inactive meat or vegetable matter between two starch planes.
It's a long walk back to France if you don't get this one right, Primat. All right. Show me organically inactive meat or vegetable matter between two starch planes. Sandwich, all right, that's acceptable, okay. 12 people said sandwich, all right, Connie. Something that people like to bite.
The big one.
The big one, all right. Does our audience bite the big one? Well, we all want to know that one. We're going to find out right now. Show me the big one. All right.
Oh, wait a minute. We forgot something.
Oh, yeah. There's an exploding whale outside. Should we do something about that?
Yeah. Let's do something about that. Well, we have a lot of things going on the Place to Be Nation Pop Experience, so let's fill you in on what's been going down on the Pop Experience lately. In episode 2 of Popcorn Chicken Salad, Ben Locke, Sean Kidd, and Logan Crossland watched the 1983 classic The Twilight Zone, the movie. The topics discussed included The Midnight Special, Favorite Driving Spots, Burgess Meredith, Scatman Crothers, Old People Avengers, Slut Shaving Mrs. Weasley, Coach C of Sean's Train, Peanut Butter Burgers, 80s Power Ballads Being Ruined, Sleep Deprived Logan, an actual sentimental moment, Roles Reversed as Ben Spoils Things for Sean and Logan, and so much more. And in episode 7 of Battlestar in the 25th Century, Sean and Scott live watched Buck Rogers episode 3, Planet of the Slave Girls part 1. They discussed, among other things, Wilma enjoying putting two men against each other, her Stephanie McMahon-like laugh, food distance space food poisoning, hilarious fight scenes with stunt doubles that don't hide the faces, a new jerk of a character named Duke, a fantastic assassination attempt on Dr. Hewler, complete with Buck karate poses, and a badass gimp with a boomerang, and the fantastic Jack Palance as the Jesus-like figure Kaler. Well, I'm down with anything that features Jack Palance.
because Jack Palance is the effing man. Oh yeah, and in the series that I'm doing on Pace 3 Nation Pop Experience, Pop Goes to the Couch on Mighty Ducks Game Changers, myself was joined by James Grunberg and J.R. Senior D'Amato to review Season 1, Episode 6, Spirit of the Ducks, as we went over some of the plot elements, favorite moments, and as we predicted what to expect next on the next episode. And in Episode 14 of Pop Goes to the Classics, Miranda Berthold, Andy Afton, and Steve Riddle looked at 1963's The Sword and the Stone as they discussed the many aspects in the film, including the Chuck Jones-like animation style, Merlin the Magician's powers, the relationship between Wart and Merlin, the transformation sequences, Mad Madam Mim's great but short scenes, including the wizard duel, and the tying the legend into Excalibur. Also, be sure to check out the PTPN Wrestling Network, which includes a dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. Feed includes the Place to Be podcast, main event, Jenny and the Gents, PTPN XT, Extreme Resurrection, the NWA Saturday Special, NWA Crock and Roll, Check It Out, the Special Relations podcast, Highway to the Impact Zone, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well. It is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, The Journey Through Infinity, Hot Tokes, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, You Heard About Pluto, Bianca's First Time, and more. Also, check out the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Gable, Aaron George, That's Zone for Wrestling Warzone, Noah Sport, The Extreme Theory Dance, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, From Montreal to Boston, The Year That Was, Shrink Wrap, TNA Never Dies, Rank and File, and more. Also, Glenn and Scott Butler are continuing their spectacular journey through music, films, and more on the Non-Toxic Fanboys podcast, where they try to enjoy the things they love. Find them at Non-Toxic Fanboys on Twitter, nontoxicfanboys.com, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And join the rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, request an invite. Discussions and fun with wrestling, movies, tournaments, and all forms of pop culture. And our 2021 stretch project, serving the greatest WCW NWA wrestler of all time, is going on right now. Go to www.facebook.com/GWCWmatches and join the group to discuss nominees. And be sure not to forget to check out PlaceToBeNation.com. Each and every day, we have new voices bringing you fresh takes on articles and topics of the worlds of wrestling and sports and pop culture. And if you're doing online shopping, Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PTPN homepage, or use www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. It'll take you to Amazon and help out PTPN at no cost to you. Okay, one more thing to talk about, and we have to deal with that exploding whale that me and Chico just talked about. So let's get into the story as we close out today with the exploding Oregon whale. Minisode 7, Submission 1887. The exploding Oregon whale. The exploding Oregon whale was a news report that aired on KATU Channel 2 News in Oregon on November 9th, 1970. Well, guys, there's always this weird oddball story in the news. But yeah, like we saw with the Crichton Leprechaun, well, let's go even way further back from the Crichton Leprechaun. Let's go back to the Oregon coast. On November 9th, 1970, this whale appears on the beach. And you have a beached whale that's dead on the beach. And there's no way that the people can get this whale off the beach. So what do you do? What do you do to get this whale off the beach?
I don't know. You grab a bunch of shovels and let whatever come what may.
You could do what Peter Griffin did. You could take a forklift and try and push it back in the ocean.
Okay, so shovels, forklift. I actually have a friend who lived in Key West who was trying to get a shark back into the water. So whatever she did.
Well, would you believe that 3 days later, the town decided, you know what? We're going to blow this whale up with dynamite. And that'll solve the problem.
How is that going to solve a problem?
You get rid of the whale. I get that part of the problem being solved, but the whale's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, but where would it go? Well, the news just happened to be there for this story on KATU in Portland, Oregon. And the story was being reported by news reporter Paul Lindman. And, well, you have all this crowd that's gathered to see this whale getting blown up on the beach. And, well, guys,
We're going to play the clip and give commentary over it right here.
It had to be said, the Oregon State Highway Division not only had a whale,
look at that whale
on its hands, it had a stinking whale of a problem. What to do with one 45-foot, 8-ton whale dead on arrival
dead on
the
over.
Beach near Florence? It had been so long since a whale had washed.
Look at how big that whale is.
That is a really big whale. They have, like, people next to it as a point of reference.
Be buried because it might soon be uncovered. It couldn't be cut up and then buried because nobody wanted to cut it up, and it couldn't be burned. So dynamite it was, some 20...
Okay, so that explains.
They can't cut it, they can't burn it, so let's just blow it up.
Yeah.
And that any small piece is still around...
Oh, Peter would have an issue with this nowadays.
Nobody wanted to blow it up. Nobody wanted to burn it, so they blew it up.
Yeah, so what else were they going to do? You can't bury it. Highway engineer in charge of the project. Who cares what Peter says?
Well, I'm confident that it'll work. The only thing is we're not sure just exactly how much explosives it'll take to disintegrate this thing so the scavengers, seagulls, and crabs and whatnot can clean it up.
Is there any chance it might be more than a one-day job?
If there's any large chunks left, and we may have to do some other cleanup, possibly set another charge.
Oh.
The dynamite was buried primarily on the leeward side of the big mammal, so as most of the remains would be blown toward the sea. About 75 bystanders, most of them residents who had first found...
Look at all these people. They don't know what they're in for.
Well, they're putting the dynamite in the right place. They're trying to blow them back into the ocean.
We're covered with spectators
yeah.
and land...
Yeah. Do these people
Hold
know
on.
How to...
Hold on, we're missing...
With a blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds.
Ah...
Nice. Here we go. Countdown. Five.
Does anybody here know how dynamite works?
Two, one.
That's how dynamite works.
Oh.
Suffice it to say, it's raining blubber.
Yes.
It's raining blubber. It's raining blubber.
They don't write about this stuff in the Bible, guys.
Oh, look what's happened.
Huge chunks of whale blubber fell everywhere. Pieces of meat passed high over our heads while others were falling at our feet.
Oh, no.
We were rapidly evacuated as spectators escaped both the falling debris and the overhang.
Oh, look at that.
A parked car over a quarter of a mile from the blast site was the target of one large chunk.
Oh, my.
Ouch.
Fortunately, no human was hit as badly as the car. However, everyone on the scene was covered with small particles of dead whale. As for the success of the effort, well, the seagulls who were supposed to clean things up were nowhere in sight.
Oh.
Either scared away by the explosion or kept away by the smell. That didn't really matter. The remaining chunks were of such a size that no respectable seagull would attempt to tackle anyway. As darkness began to set in, the highway crews were back on the beach burying the remains, including a large piece of the carcass which never left the blast site. It might be concluded that should a whale ever wash ashore in Lane County again, those in charge will not only remember what to do, they'll certainly remember what not to do.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so that happened. You have a bunch of dynamite, blow up a whale, and there's pieces of dead whale everywhere. Yikes. Well, I'm looking at where News Nation actually did a story last year about the 50th anniversary of the exploding Oregon whale.
Yeah, and believe it or not, they actually interviewed Paul Lindman. He's still alive 50 years later.
Oh, God bless him. He's still with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they actually interviewed him and got his account about it.
Yeah, he says... It wasn't an easy way of disposing of it, and as most of the world knows now, the choice was dynamite. He still got it! So, there were other ways to dispose of a whale carcass, but the whale was too large to use any of those options. So, Linneman goes on and says, they decided to consult with the Navy and decided to blow it up into tiny little pieces that could easily be disposed of and taken care of by seagulls. You heard about that in the original piece. Seagulls were nowhere to be found, though. I mean, the Navy used half a ton of dynamite. It was not enough. Luckily, nobody was injured or killed. but as you recall, a car did get flattened.
Yeah. Car went flat. Thank God no one was in the car, because...
Yeah. That would have been a little bit more tragic.
Yeah, that would have been a catastrophe.
I mean, we're lucky that no one got seriously injured in this, because, dear Lord, all that blubber. I love the part where Paul says, and I think Chico talked over, but I'll play it here.
The sand dunes there were covered with spectators and land lubber newsmen, shortly to become land blubber newsmen.
See, what a great pun. Land lubber newsmen. About
you can't
to be...
write puns like that anymore.
No, land blubber newsmen. Where the blasted blubber beyond all believable. That's the part that makes this clip so great. The blasted blubber. And he said that with a straight face without laughing.
Yep.
What a professional Paul Inman is.
I bet there's more stories where that came from.
Well, what else do we have to say about the exploding Orkin whale?
Well, what can I say except long before it became a viral sensation, it was a thing on TV.
Yep.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this mini-episode, and we'll be back with a new episode on Monday. See you then. Wow! Kaboom!
You say kaboom! That's got to be the ending. Kaboom!
Kaboom!
And then splat.
Splat.
Kaboom! Splat. Crash.
Or hold on a second.
Oh, my car. Greg, what are you going to do?
Oh, you know what? It's sad that it's not a video podcast because, hold on a second, this would be the image to close the episode. You ready? Mike, you ready?
I'm watching. Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
I wonder if Valdar and Primat met Wilsiak on the moon.
Oh, no. Wilsiak. I was wondering where you're going with that. Oh, my.
Look at him. Poor Wilsiak. Look at him. He's all dead on the moon.
Poor Wilsiak.
He's dead on the moon, man.
The best ending of all time. He died on the moon.